Welcome to Kane & Rince Sound of Play 2. Over the decades, they've evolved from simplistic monaural beeps to full orchestral scores recorded in 7.1 surround. But from their earliest days right up to today, soundtracks have played an integral part of our memories of the games we've played and the times in our lives when we were playing them. With Sound of Play, we aim to bring you a fortnightly, eclectic mix of some of our favourite pieces from the many bliss-eliciting, fear-arousing and hair-erecting video game soundtracks we've heard over the years. But of course, it's not just about what we like, so if you venture over to our forum at kaneorince.com, you can request your favourites, and we'll start to include a selection of those in the playlist for each show. Joining me, Leon Cox, in this Sound of Play, it's Jay Taylor.
Hello.
And Joshua Garrity.
Hello there.
Right, here we are again. More musics. Josh is new to this, so let's blood him in straight away with his first selection. Josh, what have you brought?
The track I've chosen is simply called Prologue, but it comes from the Shadow of the Colossus soundtrack, which was composed by Koatani. The reason why I picked this track in particular is because I think everyone has tracks from games that either remind them of certain moments in games or just remind them of the entire experience, just puts them right back into that world and right back into the, you know, the first time they played through the game. And that is what this track represents to me. Whenever I hear this, I'm immediately transported to the barren landscapes of Shadow of the Colossus. And I love the way this track evolves as it goes on. It doesn't have a tune that it goes back to. It just constantly changes, and new instruments are introduced as the track goes along. And it really tugs at my heartstrings. I mean, I know that's a cliche thing to say, but every time I hear this track, it makes me think of the journey that your character in Shadow of the Colossus went through, and how heartbreaking it is, and how emotional it was for me when I first played this game. And it just transports me back to that world. And it's a truly beautiful track.
Thank you. was Kō Ohtani's prologue from Shadow of the Colossus. Now, it's hard to believe, but we covered both Ico and Shadow of the Colossus in one podcast, and it was very nearly 3 years ago. In fact, it may be 3 years ago by the time you hear this recording, October 2011. So check out Kane & Rince issue 4. Can they still get that one on iTunes, or do they have to get that one from the website? It might be so old.
No, it should be on iTunes.
Should be on iTunes. Okay. And kaneandrince.com, of course. My next selection comes from a music game. Post Parappa the Rapper, the following few years after that, the Bimani craze rhythm action went big. And there were games like this one that I'm going to talk about, originally titled Buster Move in Japan. But of course, because they'd renamed Puzzle Bobble Buster Move in the West, we had Buster Move renamed to Buster Groove. This was one that you controlled. This was a PlayStation 1 game. You controlled it with a controller. It had elements of a fighting game in that it was character on the left and character on the right, having a dancing showdown. It was by Enix. And then a lot of the sort of westernization of the version that we got over here was done by Sony's 989 Studios in America. I could have chosen a number of the songs from this game. There's certainly some interesting stories to be told about the censorship between the versions, the one that was released in Japan, certain things that were certain words that were used in songs and certain images that were removed, sanitized for the Western version. But I've gone for a song which is actually a very clean cut, a pure piece of bubblegum J-pop. Although I think this actually debuted in the Western game and then didn't arrive in the Japanese game until the second one. I could be wrong about that. It's also very hard to pin down who recorded the vocal for the Western version. I've not had any luck, but I know the composer of the song was Tetsutaro Sakurai. And it's got also a song with multiple titles. I've seen it referred to as Hizashi no Oku no Happy Heart, which means Happy Heart in the Sunshine, or Warate Pon, which means crack a smile, or, as we probably know it best, Shorty and the Easy Mouse. This young girl, Shorty, has gone to the fairground. Her backstory goes something like she's the daughter of a supermodel and an international spy or something like that. And she's rich, so she doesn't have to do anything. So she just goes down to the fairground with her stuffed mouse, Columbo, to dance this song. Now, this is the sort of song that I probably wouldn't be caught dead listening to had I not loved playing along to it in a game. It could be by Bewitched or something like that. And then obviously it wouldn't be a part of my record collection. But I do like it. It is beautifully constructed cheese. And we did, yes, back in the day, inappropriately enough, used to gain extra chuckles from it by accidentally on purpose, hearing Easy Mouse as Easy Mouth, which makes the song take on a much darker tone.
Oh,
Shorty and her Easy Mouth, Easy Mouse there from Bust a Groove, or Bust a Move if you're Japanese. And that is, of course, obviously the American version. You can easily find the Japanese version with, you know, the sort of Japanese style pop singing that you'd expect out there as well. Jay, you're back for Sound of Play 2 with us. You have three more selections, and which would you like to hit us with first?
The first track I'm going to pick, it's going to be from Red Dead Redemption, and it's the track is entitled The Shootist by Bill Elms and Willie Jackson. Now, it goes without saying that, you know, a lot, when it comes to Rockstar and their soundtrack, you know, everybody kind of remembers like the Grand Theft Auto things, which is mostly just licensed music, although they do have their own kind of sort of instrumental theme scores, which for some reason always seem to get passed over by a lot of people when it comes to remembering. But the two games that I think stand out for Rockstar's game, Rockstar's soundtracks, are Bully and Red Dead. This soundtrack's impressive as hell. I mean, this particular track is extremely reminiscent. I mean, obviously, it pays homage to the likes of Ennio Morricone's sort of spaghetti western themes, but it's you know, and it takes its name from a famous sort of 1976 film. So it's just, but it's such a good soundtrack that when you play the game, I mean, the use of their instrumental usage is incredible. They used old like Jaws harps and stuff like that. They know their stuff, and they create probably one of Rockstar's most atmospheric scores for any game they've done.
Thank you. So that's Bill Elms and Woody Jackson on the Red Dead Redemption soundtrack. I do recommend, they both feature in an act called The Friends of Dean Martinez, but I do recommend, they're also associated with Calexico and Giant Sand, who are two bands that I really like. And if there are fans out there of the kind of music in Red Dead Redemption, I reckon recommend seeking out some Giant Sand albums and Calexico for sure. Josh, your second tune, please.
So the game is Shovel Knight, and the track is Strike the Earth, brackets, Plains of Passage, close brackets, by Jake Kaufman. For anyone who doesn't know, Shovel Knight is a 2D platformer that is heavily inspired by platformers from the 16-bit, 8-bit era, which sounds like every other platformer that gets released every other week. But Shovel Knight really does try its best to limit itself to the technology or, you know, color schemes and what have you that the developers had access to at the time. Now, it does, take some liberties, obviously, to make things look more pretty for today's audience. And Jake Kaufman kind of took the same approach to the music. So it's very, very inspired by the chiptune music from that era. But of course, he's taken some liberties here and there, so it allows him to, just cram his tracks on the soundtrack with a bit more flavor than was possible back in the day. The entire soundtrack for this game is fantastic, but I picked this one in particular because it's the first track you hear when you enter the game properly, and it's really joyful. It supercharges you when you enter the game. You feel like you're ready for anything. It's just very optimistic and upbeat, and it really reminds you of the absolute best chiptune music of that era. And I think Jake Kaufman has done an excellent job of capturing why so many people remember that music so fondly.
looking at Jake Kaufman's CV, it makes perfect sense that he's a bit of a chiptunes whiz, because he seemed to start most of his career in the very early 2000s on Game Boy Color, which of course, you know, wasn't blessed with an outrageously powerful sound chip. So he kind of cut his teeth working with that sort of 8-bit sound. But since then, he's done stuff for, he's worked with WayForward quite a bit. He did Contra 4, which is obviously a retro update. Worked on Double Dragon Neon, which is another WayForward retro update. Retro City Rampage. DuckTales and other things like that. So definitely a man to seek out his back catalogue, I should imagine. My next selection is from even farther back than the start of Kaufman's career. It's from my youth, my childhood on the pier of Brighton. I can't really think of a more vivid memory than the one I have of standing at multiple times, I should say, at the Salamander machine on the Palace Pier, Brighton, from 1986 to whenever they took it away, probably a couple of years later. I even remember the time when a kid with bad breath was looking over my shoulder and telling me how to play, even though I already knew how to play perfectly well. Thank you very much. And breathing his fetid breath in my ear, in my nose. And I've been in love with Salamander since then. It was the sort of it was a follow up to Nemesis or Gradius, but it did away with the slightly complex power up system of collecting tokens and then activating. So you just picked up things as they dropped. It had amazing booming speech and astonishing graphics, including the famous third level where you're scrolling horizontally between sort of fire flares, like solar bursts, stunning thing. And all the way through, you're backed by various tunes by Miki Higashino, one of the many female composers from the classic coin-op era. Of course, probably only credited as Konami Kukeha Club at the time. This is the first level music. It's called Power of Anger. But this is a 2-for-1 because Konami revisited Salamander 10 years later after a whole load of other Gradius and Nemesis games. They came back with Salamander 2, the same piece of music featured again, but obviously we were 10 years further down the road in arcade tech, and so it is the same tune, but greatly embellished. Enjoy. We'll be right back. Two tunes there, that was. The same tune twice, if you will, but one from 86, one from 96, Salamander. And yes, from the arcades to the handhelds of the mid-2000s.
The next song is Loco Roco's song, the yellow Loco Roco version.
Yes, there are versions for each of the, what, six, seven, yep. eight colours? I have yep. this CD myself. So I'm,
oh, so
I'm,
do I.
Yes, I'm very familiar with it, yeah.
The track's by Nobuyuki Shimizu and Kemai Adachi. Now, I'm going to confess that I haven't actually played Loco Roco because I didn't actually have a PSP. What I did play was, and the reason I'm attached to this song, is Loco Roco Cocorecho that came out on the PS3 a year later. And through playing that and just really getting into that kind of, and you've got to call it cute because it's really hard to think of many words where it just kills me how cute this song sounds.
It is cute.
Yeah. And so it was, I don't know, I got attached to it. And then when one of our trips to Japan, I came across the CD for the game, for the main game, and thought, I've got to have this. Because I saw on the back, I noticed that there was all those different versions for the song. So I thought, oh, I've got to check this out. And really, that's all there is to it. I you know, the soundtrack is sort of embedded into my iTunes. And every now and again, when you're just listening on a random shuffle playlist and one of these tracks comes up, it, you know, it just raises a smile. And I don't know, you know, that's just how it is. And it's, yeah, I really appreciate the track. I just think it's quite uplifting. And it just sort of, yeah, well.
CD myself. It's probably not a CD to listen to all in one go because the...
Oh, I don't know about that.
but it's like that, only multiple times. It is quite funny, yeah. Because all the different Loco Rocos have different voices. You know, it's hard to describe, but worth checking out. You can still get both Loco Rocos 1 and 2 on PSN. You can play them on your Vita, I believe. Hmm. There's a little connection between Josh's first selection and this, almost, sort of, because Tsutomu Kuono, who worked on, who is the designer, chief designer of Loco Roco, was actually at Team Eco when Eco was being made, but he left before Shadow of the Colossus. So just a nugget of trivia for you there. Well, I didn't see this coming. We've got Josh on Sound of Play. What could he possibly have picked on his first Sound of Play podcast for us to listen to?
Well, it's Dark Souls. So I'm sorry, James Carter, you're going to have to pick something else when you come on this podcast. So
he doesn't like game music anyway, does he? He's always on about it.
Oh, yeah, no.
He doesn't notice game music.
Oh, so he's never being on this show.
No Sound of Play for James.
Okay. Anyway, well, to represent James Carter then, I'm picking a track from Dark Souls. The track is called Gwyn, Lord of Cinder, and it was composed by Mutoi Sakuraba. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, ladies and gentlemen. This track is the theme for the final boss. And I don't want to go into any details. Obviously, I don't want to spoil.
No spoilers on Sound of Play. We should. Yeah, that's a promise. Yeah.
I won't spoil that. But I need to explain why this is significant while also beating around the bush. So a lot of the boss battle themes in Dark Souls are very triumphant and big and just have a sense of scale to them. Like the Ornstein and Smo theme, for example, feels very reminiscent of like a Khazad-dûm feel, you know, the theme, Khazad-dûm theme from Lord of the Rings or something like that. It has that very large scale fantasy, you know, brass everywhere kind of music orchestration. But Gwyn, Lord of Cinder is just a piano quietly weeping. And when you get to that point in the game, when you get towards the end, you kind of understand why this music choice was made and why the tone of this battle is so sad and so miserable and depressing. It's a really... It's a memorable track because it contrasts so much with what's going on screen, but at the same time, it seems oddly fitting. It's the last piece of music, apart from the music that goes over the credits you hear in Dark Souls. And I think everyone who finishes Dark Souls remembers this track more than any other in the game. It's a beautiful piece of music from a game that, while has quite a lot of great tracks, doesn't have one quite as subtle as this. This is the only one that's quite this subtle and quite this beautiful and quite this, I don't know, intimate is the best word I can think of. Give it a listen.
much a case of from the sublime to the ridiculous here on Sound of Play from Sakuraba's beautiful, heartfelt music for Dark Souls to the rather more absurd music of Robin Beanland of Rare. And yes, it is Conker. Conker's, it's not Bad Fur Day. Now, the reason is because it's twofold. The reason we're using The Great Mighty Poo from Live and Reloaded is twofold. One, because this was the Xbox version, and so the music was embellished with the CD format. It was 4 years further down the line, I think, and the orchestra that backs the great Slaprano, as voiced by, I believe, a software engineer, Chris Marlowe, is more opulent than the N64 original, as you'd expect, certainly less compressed. But also, famously, the Nintendo platform game, as released by THQ, was full of swearing, obscenities, foul language, and so on, whereas, ironically, the Xbox version came complete with censorship. The censorship's a bit, if you'll pardon the pun, scattershot, in that you'll hear some vaguely naughty words throughout the course of this operatic piece, but the worst offenders have been farted out. we had to have this in. I'm sorry to nick this one off Darren Garget, but it was actually him who put it in mind on by singing a few bars of it on one of his recent quick rinses for Crypt of the Necro Dancer. It is absolutely the most base humor you can possibly think of, influenced, it's very British, influenced by Viz Comic and things like that, some of the words you'll hear, but there is no denying that I knew all the words, I could sing along to it, and I probably still would if I had the game. So here we go, The Great Mighty Poo from 2005's Conker Live and Reloaded.
I am the great mighty Poo, and I am going to throw my at you. A huge supply of teeth comes from my chocolate starfish. How about some scat, you little...
Your butt.
My butt.
Your butt.
That's right, my butt. My butt. My butt.
Right, now we've flushed that out of our systems. I should be a real DJ, shouldn't I? We'll conclude with something a little more befitting of our reputation for being serious and somber and lacking in levity with Jay's final choice for this Sound of Play.
Right, my last track is from the game Operation Flashpoint Dragon Rising, and the track is called Dragon Rising, and it's by Jonah Maros. Now, it occurred to me, there's a thing with this, because this is the main menu theme music. This is the music you hear on the main menu of the game. And it occurred to me that I've actually got a lot of tracks where it's the main menu music and not necessarily from the game itself. And the thing is, I realized that I actually, for certain games, I'll mute the music because the music sometimes feels inappropriate to the game, and particularly with this game being a very sort of Arma-esque style strategic shooter, if you will, that it counterpointed the sort of realism that they were aiming for when I had this big scored sort of soundtrack back in the music. So for the rest of the game, I actually muted the soundtrack because I wanted to hear the bullets whizzing, but I wanted that sort of just having the sort of environmental sounds and all that kind of stuff. That was all I wanted to hear when I was actually playing. But the menu music is really quite haunting. And it's different in the sense that I've never heard, to my knowledge, I've certainly never played any other game that had Mongolian or Tuvan throat singing in the theme music.
There might be some, but
I'm sure there possibly is, but I've certainly never come across them myself. I did wonder if Uncharted 2 soundtrack, I would need to listen to it again, but that's not Mongolian. Peruvian. They're in Nepal, which maybe it's a different style of singing, but it sounds familiar. But anyway, this it really stood out to me. There's a couple of films a few years before this game came out in 2009. There was a few films that we've got and are quite fond of, like Story of the Weeping Camel and Cave of the Yellow Dog, which are set, you know, they're based in southern Mongolia, and the soundtracks include like throat singing, and I find myself strangely fascinated by this. I've got bookmarked YouTube videos of I guess they're like the sort of the Mongolian pop stars that do this or whatever. Mm. But and it's so fascinating. It's quite unlike anything else I can think of. It's such a strange, I guess, to our Western ears or any lack of understanding behind the culture behind it, it's quite distinctively different to anything I've heard before. And to hear this on this main theme music, and it's, you've got this male throat singer, and then it's counterbalanced with a female singer, and it's extremely haunting music.
All right, before we hear from Jonah Maros and the anonymous vocalists, it just remains for me, Leon Cox, to thank Jay Taylor and Joshua Garrity, and we'll see you next time on Sound of Play.